This is episode 83 of the Wildlife Photography Podcast. In this episode, talking safari value with Mike. Hi, everybody. My name is Jerry. I'm from Wild Eye. And it's like yesterday's podcast, I spent a time with Marlon, who I haven't seen for a while. Same goes with Mike. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Jerry. Hi, guys.
When did we last see each other?
Oh, it's been a while, eh?
It's been quite ridiculous. Where was your last trip?
I actually think it was just before I went to Shenzhela, but that was like for a day, not even.
Yeah, we saw each other in the Mara for a couple of days.
And then, yeah, that was...
I think that was it.
Yeah.
Crazy. It's been ridiculous. How was your last safari?
Oh, it was great. Yeah, it was very, very cool. Weather treated us well. We had great group dynamics. Sightings were good. We had insane elephant sightings. And I just completed the blog on this particular safari, a report on it. So
I saw that go live, yeah.
Yeah, if you want to check it out, go check out the Wild Eye website.
What was it called? Trip Report Shenzhela, sorry.
Yeah, Shenzhela Safari Trip Report.
Okay.
Truly a week of the African elephants.
Yeah.
I remember the safari we had there in May. Yes, we barely saw an elephant.
Amazing how dynamic it is.
Yeah, and I explained I spoke a bit about the movements of animals, it is, and kind of the philosophy kind of behind it and how strange it is, because I mean, there's so many guys out there that say this is why animals do this is why animals do that, and it's just what they think.
You never know.
You'd never really know.
Just for me and for the guys listening, Shenzhela is in the Timavati.
Correct. Yeah.
Where did it border?
Basically, if you look at a map of the Kruger National Park, it's very central Kruger National Park. So, just to the west of Satara Resting Area. Hoedspruit area.
Further north than Sabi.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. Okay. And we're going to lead into a question. That's what we're going to do. This is the value of a safari, or the perceived value of a safari, or the cost, whatever the case is. Mm-hmm. So, you're going to read a question for us in a bit. Let's just keep going quickly. What is your next trip from here on?
My next trip is the Timbavati Safari. So again, same region of Kruger, but it is the Umlani and Adamlani, which is a bit further north of Shenzhela, pretty far north in the Timbavati.
I had it the other way around.
You think Umlani was south?
Gotcha.
No, it was it's a bit further north.
Okay.
And the cool thing about the Timbavati is the elephants are massive. A lot of Mupani trees up north in Kruger. And a lot of protein in this tree, which is beneficial if you enjoy watching elephants and photographing elephants.
Nice.
Some big guys up there.
So then it's Timbavati, and then you're going straight into our seminar.
Correct, yes. That's Sabi Sabi. Yeah, so
your presentation's done yet.
Yes, they actually are. You must go through them so you can crit me on it. They're done.
Yeah.
And
What are you talking on?
Two presos in the seminar. I'm chatting about, do you put in the time to practice? Do you find the time to practice?
Yeah.
And because a lot of the time people do not want to photograph back home because there's not a subject that they enjoy photographing.
Yeah.
Firstly, that's a big mistake, because not only are you going to get unfamiliar with how your camera works, buttons around it, but secondly, our muscle memory is a massive thing. So the more you use it, the better you become at it.
Absolutely.
And then I'd say the third point is... What was the third point? It just disappeared.
Well, you're ahead of me. I thought I had to work on mine.
No, but when you photograph subjects that you're not comfortable with, or go into a whole different genre of photography, street photography, people portraits, whatever it may be, you're going to learn from this.
Yeah.
Because it's a totally new thing. And the only way to learn is to try something different, try something new. So I'm chatting about that. And my second prezo is using distracting elements in your frame to your advantage, the good, the bad, the ugly.
Like aperture, like blurring out branches.
Blurring out branches, but how, if you cannot blur out branches, how it can still be used as something good in your frame, in your image. Yeah.
That's very interesting. I am going to, just for you guys listening, I'm not sure how yet, but I'm going to try and podcast and record the audio of all our presentation. It's yourself, me, Marlon, and Johan.
And Laura, I think, speaking.
Laura speaking. I'm going to get her thinking.
And John is also doing his...
I think there's about 11 presentations over those 5 days, which is pretty cool. So I'm going to try and record the audio for podcasts, but that's in due course. The interesting, I think, what you said there is that a lot of people want to become better, and then muscle memory. They get on the trip, and the first afternoon, they're all over the place.
Where
do I turn it on? What is aperture? How do I change it? And it's literally is those people that go home, take pictures of their dogs, their pets, their cactus at home, that, no, you've got to commit. Is what it is, eh?
Yeah, it's a continuous battle. I mean, even for us sitting in office when things get busy, I don't know how you feel about it, but I definitely do feel it. The first day or two back out in the field, you do feel a bit... unsure, but you feel a bit weary of...
That's right. On the first day, I normally just make sure that people do their stuff and I don't touch my camera. Enough.
Exactly.
Play with it later on.
Learn from their mistakes.
And then after seminar, you're on another trip, eh?
Yes, and I run and host the Knotton's Photo Safari.
How long is all of that together? To Mbivadi through Knotton, about a month?
Yeah, almost a month, yeah.
Yes, so you get the long runs, eh?
Yeah.
Kenya was a whole
month. That was a full month. But it's good, though. I've got a month in office, you can catch up, and then a month in the field.
I was just wondering here, how long have you been with us now?
Actually,
it must be damn close.
1st of October was a year. Yeah.
Holy shit, happy anniversary, that's amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Good lord, is that already?
It's crazy. Actually, I thought of it while I was on my safari in...
1st of October, eh? 1st of October.
Yes, yeah, because Joe asked me, how long have you been with Wild Eye? And that's when it struck me. I was like, holy hell, it's been a year. So yeah, pretty cool.
And the cool thing is, I mean, for those people that not, we're not big on it. I mean, Marlon gives you some shit in the office, but that's fine.
Most
of the time, yes. But now the cool thing is, I mean, for those of you that understand the industry, the FNG.
Oh yeah, there's a new one, happily.
Yeah, so Alistair, if you're listening, dude, Alistair Smith is starting with us from Londolozi. He's starting on the 1st of November, which is a couple of weeks away.
Mm-hmm.
And he will be taking over the FNG role in the office. For those of you that do not know, the FNG is the fucking new guide. Lodge was normally a thing. Here it's not a big thing. But Alistair, now that we're getting bigger, I think we're going to have to go hard on him.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Alistair, looking forward to it. But I hope you can make a good cup of coffee, man. Okay, sure. Anyway, the thought behind this, and yesterday on your Instagram, let's do it now. What is your Instagram handle if people want to still follow you?
It is Michael Laubscher. So Michael.Laubscher. My surname is spelled L-A-U. B-S-C-H-E-R.
Done. I've also tagged you, and I will tag you again.
Brilliant.
When I put this on Instagram, go and give Mike a follow. Some good stuff going on there. we asked a question. I did a podcast with Marlon yesterday, and that was based off questions that people asked. So we just ran with that. Then someone asked you a question. You can read it for us now.
Yeah, sure.
But I think it's a big thing, and I touched on this a while ago, but I think it's a very interesting discussion for people who are keen to come on a safari and a photo safari. So the question you received is what?
Cool. So this question comes from Dustin, and this is one that truly stood out to me. And this is basically, his question is, what is the best value safari in terms of cost and quality of sightings and variety?
And what do you think?
It's an extremely difficult question to answer.
Yeah.
I mean, it truly is, because what I see as value, you might not particularly see as value.
It's like, how long is a piece of string?
Exactly. Yeah. Everyone is going to have a different view on this.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we can spend days speaking about this, and you're never going to get to a conclusion.
Exactly.
Because people have totally different views on things. So I think it comes down to what you want to get out of this experience as a whole.
Uh-huh.
Not only sightings, but where you want to travel to, the people you'd like to travel with. That's if you want to travel with someone.
Because then there's private guided safari.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't want to travel with someone, private guided.
Yeah.
Again, so if you want a private guided safari, you're going to be paying quite a bit
more
for it.
It's a premium product. I mean,
it is.
It definitely is.
But if you don't mind traveling with a group of 12, Amara Camp, I mean, that place is booming. It is an absolute gem.
It's such a tough... Well, how much... this might sound stupid, but how much is, for example, the Shindela Safari now?
Let's just hit me off now. It's roughly about
$1,500. $1,500 for how many days?
Five nights.
Okay. Yes. So now let's be stupid about this and say, right, let's look at Svalbard, which is also a photo safari.
Of course.
That is 10 nights, which is double the time, and it costs $12,000.
Exactly. Bam.
Sorry, that's wind in the door. Ouch.
Or a ghost.
Or a ghost. Yeah, hope not. It's Alistair haunting us. And I think there's value. I mean, $12,000 for a Svalbard experience for 10 nights versus $1,500 for African safari. Some people don't want to go to Svalbard, so there's no value for them.
Of course.
Some people would give their left eyeball to go to Svalbard, so there's a lot of value for them based on the price. The thing that makes me nervous on Dustin's question is people go and they look for value safari.
Exactly.
Or budget safari, and then you're going to burn.
You're definitely going to burn. and yeah, it's a big thing. So it's like you mentioned, that it's, you can't compare Svalbard to Shenzhela. And it comes down to what you want to see, what you want to photograph, if you want to photograph, if you want to join others on the safari.
Yeah.
But yes, going the budget route is definitely not the way to do it.
We had and maybe we're going to go just a bit deep here, but we had a discussion yesterday in the office based on kind of, because we're taking bookings now, you'll know, well into 2019.
Yeah.
We're booking your Big Cats trip for July. We've got bookings on there for 2019.
Exactly.
The migration trip you and I think are hosting after that, we've got bookings on there. So people, each safari company is different. And I mean, I just did a quick Google when you read me that question earlier on. And if you look for value and budget safaris, it is scary as shit what comes up.
Yeah.
You are going to burn, because not every safari is created equal.
No.
So Dustin, from a what is value is, I mean, the first thing I would ask is, what is your budget?
Exactly.
If you say my budget is $5,000, where can you extract the most value? Masai Mara, easy.
Oh, for sure.
Because for a week of migration.
No, but what's Big Cats on? $4,950? Is it? $450?
$4,950. Yeah, you're right. Under five.
It's under five.
Yeah.
And that's a nine nights. Yeah.
And you've got multiple destinations.
Four destinations.
So it's exactly that. Is you got which Big Cats, which how many destinations? Four.
Four, yeah.
Four destinations versus migration, which is, say, $500 more. And it comes down to, what do you want? People, I don't think people know what they want.
Yeah.
Because they'll say, I want to come on a safari. Okay, yeah, and? How much? I had three on Instagram today saying, hey, I want to come on safari. How much is it? Can you quote me? No, I can't.
Yeah.
I really cannot, because I can quote you. And I did this on my Snapchat many moons ago. I think you were here already. And I went from $1,000 all the way through $15,000, what you can get, places you could stay at.
Yeah, that was about a year ago.
Yeah. So people don't understand that. So when I say, right, I'm your client. Mm-hmm. Mike, I want to go on safari. How much is it? Now what do we do?
Yeah, that's pretty impossible. So how much you want to spend, what you want to see, where do you want to go to? Do you want to see multiple destinations?
Exactly.
How long do you want to be on safari?
Exactly. People don't understand that multiple destination thing is great for diversity, but you have to get from one place to the next.
Yeah, it's not like you're going to walk.
So you
can. It's going to prolong the whole process.
It's crazy. So, I mean, I think if Dustin had to phone you up now, what are the three questions you would ask him and why?
Okay. So I'd start off with what he wants to photograph, because that's going to give you a direct idea on, okay, I'm going to go to the Mara, or I'm going to go to Kruger, or I'm going to go to Svalbard, or...
Oh, you're not going to photograph the migration in the Sabi.
No ways. And you're not going to photograph the tiger in the sands either, so...
Well, I've had some guests ask to photograph tigers in the sands.
Likewise. Yeah. Anyway, that's a different discussion for a different day. So, species that you want to photograph.
Yeah.
Secondly, probably the duration of time. Yeah. That you want to be on safari, and then lastly and probably most importantly, what is your budget?
Yeah,
because when I know the budget, then that's going to answer questions of, okay, yes, we can afford 5-star accommodation, or we're going to be in a tented camp. We're going to see only one destination.
Yeah,
because there's not enough cash for
to move around
a charter flight across from Manapools to Angie, for example. So yeah, that's those three questions probably, in a nutshell, will be able to help me and the ladies in office find and put together a great itinerary.
Absolutely. So, and then there's the thing of perceived value. So I'm going to use a restaurant, for example. I will never Google, personally, cheapest restaurant around me. That's just going to end in tears, man. Something's going to go wrong.
Get some leftover bones. So,
exactly. Yeah. Yesterday's vegetables. I would look at, and I like looking at fancy restaurants because I enjoy going out with friends, having a glass of wine and discussing over dinner.
Yeah.
So I will Google all of that, but then I will go and I'll see, holy shit, that's an expensive steak. But then I'll go and read reviews and see what people say about that restaurant and that steak and the service. And then, because when I go to a restaurant, I'm not just paying for my meal. If I'm going to pay 280 Rand for a steak, I'm fucking insane. I'm just not going to. Unless, Terrence, if you're listening, in New York we did way more than that, but that's very different, okay? But then, to me, it's about, I'm happy to spend that money on a great evening, but it's not just the food. It's the food, the ambience, the service, there's no children running around screaming and shouting, the lighting's good, the decor. It's about the total experience. It's the perceived value of what I'm paying for.
Exactly. Yeah.
So now, people might say to you, that's cool, so I can come with you to Shenzhela on a trip with, how many people go on there? Six?
Yeah.
Six and you, or I can pay as a private guided trip, which is probably going to be up 2.5-3 times the price.
Yeah,
I'm sure. Thumb sucking here. But what is the perceived value?
To Shenzhela, private to Shenzhela.
Yeah, so if you take one person with you as a private guide, it's going to be more expensive.
Mm,
but people headline read. This is the problem. Yeah. They'll look at the top and say, oh, no, goodness, this is $10,000, this is $7,000, the seven must be better.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with the perceived value in our industry. There's so much more than just the lodge and the game view.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot more behind it.
Don't think people understand that. And I mean, and Dustin asking that question, has Dustin asked you about safaris yet?
Not yet.
Okay, but he's going to.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah. I have been in contact and I replied to that particular mail and we've been engaging on Instagram a little bit.
Yeah.
And I've looked at some of his work. And yeah, it'll be great to get him out into the field and photograph some guys in the wild.
Dustin, drop him another email if you're listening to this and go deep. I think a lot of people need to go deeper when they plan their safaris. And, I could have a serious bitching session here now about some people in our industry and the way they do things, but I'm not going to because I'm a nice guy and I don't have time now. But I also think the guests who book trips have to go deeper.
They do.
And look at your feed, at Mike's Instagram feed, for example. He's adding value. He's consistent. He's writing blogs. He's doing these podcasts where other people just take money.
Yeah.
There's more value behind. There's all of those things that add perceived value to a safari.
And yeah, I think it's... from what I've heard out in the field as well, from not only our guests, but from multiple people, it's shocking how little value they get provided with, even out in the field.
Yeah.
Which is, it's a scary thing. But it really is. But when you say guests have to go, or people planning a safari have to go deeper, not only for that particular reason, but so that, because obviously we provide our guests with great information as to where we're going, what the accommodations like, this, and this. But if they do their research and really go into depth as to, okay, Mike's put together a Mana Pools Wangi safari for me. We say here, and then do research on it. Before you say, okay, let's do it. Because then you don't only rely on our information, which is as accurate as possible in terms of setting that, knowing exactly what you're getting. So if you do your own research beforehand or after we've provided info, you know exactly what you're walking into and exactly what you're getting. Like our Mara camp, for example, we stress the fact that it's a very rustic tented camp, which is also by far the best way to experience the Mara.
But it's authentic and it's comfortable.
It is awesome. It really, and like this year was my first year, and we podcasted about my first.
We did actually, yes.
About my time in the Mara, and it really is great. And everything flows very, very well. So do your research. It really is. Go deep into every little possible detail so you know exactly what you're getting out of the safari. Because if you're walking into something that you've paid a hell of a lot of money for and you did not think the camp was going to be what the camp is.
I think it's about, and it's our job to create and manage expectations. I think if you want to be fair as a client, if you're going to be fair... it's like you say, it's your responsibility to read more. I think I told you this on one of the first things, where I picked up guests from an airstrip, and a British family, mom, dad, two kids, picked them up at the airstrip, they get off all nicely dressed and whatever. We're driving from the airstrip back to the lodge, we stop because there's a zebra, the kids lose their shit. Ah, it's a zebra, it's amazing. And the dad's all like excited, he's taking a picture, the mom is just sitting there. Anyway, maybe she's airsick, I don't know. We drive further, and there's an impala. Kids blew their shit again. Ah, it's amazing. Dad's taking pictures. And this lady sitting there, she's quite like... And I say to her, listen, is everything okay? And she says to me, yes. She's just a bit concerned here. How often do the landscapers come through? So this is driving through the bush, right? So I first laugh at her because I have a sense of humor and I think it's funny. And then I realized she flew from the UK to Africa. She didn't even know the name of the lodge. She didn't understand what a safari was about. So her expectation was completely off tilt.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to calibrate that. And I think something like TripAdvisor, we're on TripAdvisor now, so we're sending stuff out. The amount of, especially the American community, they love TripAdvisor. And I've often said to people, you know what, there's the TripAdvisor, go and see what our guests say. And the cool thing is, like if Dustin wants to know, we'll send him details on people who have traveled with you.
Oh, yeah, for
sure. It's that word of mouth. You have to know, because I'm going to say to you, my product is good. You're going to say, I know my product is good, but I'm going to say it.
Oh, for sure. But I mean, we can read...
Take it at face value.
Things,
speak
for sure.
To other guests.
Check stuff on websites, read things in magazines, see posters, see billboards, listen to radio adverts, listen to podcasts.
Absolutely.
Looking at our Instagram feed, whatever it may be, and it might look amazing.
Yeah.
But again, we're showing people what basically we want to tell them or make them... And all marketing is like that. You make them believe... something where you try your very best to.
Yeah.
And when you say you get FaceTime or engage with people who have actually been there, that is the best way to find out if a place is worthwhile going to.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm just now, while we're talking here, I've just Googled, what did I Google? Budget safaris, right?
Uh-huh.
Because, yes, safari is an expensive thing.
Yeah.
It is. Sure. It just is one of those things. Africa might be third world, but, and I spoke about this when I podcasted from New York about the level of the Canadian guiding and lodges,
mm-hmm.
and I said how much better Africa is, because it's what we do, and we do it damn well.
Oh, yeah.
So the mistake people make is they go Google budget or cheap safaris.
Yeah.
I'm not going to Google cheap restaurant or cheap dentist. Shit's going to go bad, right? So what I get here is 3-day Kruger Park exclusive lodge safari. What do you think when you hear exclusive?
That's all to me. I can use it.
I mean, I'm thinking, if you say it's me exclusive, all, I'm thinking it's prime, and I've got a private guide and a vehicle. So
no other guests, private chef.
10 people on this particular one. Game viewing in either an open 4x4 or a microbus. This is the small print.
Okay.
Is he?
Microbus is very fun, I'm sure.
I'd rather poke myself in the eyeball with a blunt knife.
Yeah.
A fantastic 3-star lodge tour to the Kruger Park. So, but this is marketed as exclusive.
Yeah.
So, in real terms,
I wonder if they know what the word exclusive means.
No, of course not. I mean, if I say to you, this is exclusive, I'm thinking prime, private guided stuff. We had a thing in the Mara. You know those matatus?
Yes.
So a couple of years ago, we're sitting there, and there's this matatu. So matatu is the minivans that are in the Mara, and they come driving from the
packed
front.
Packed with like 20 people.
Yeah, exactly. So on the front, it says exclusive safaris. And I look at Jimmy or Sammy, one of the guys, and I say, what the hell? That's not... And as I say that, there's literally 20 heads that pop out the top of this thing.
Oh, man, that's right.
How is that exclusive? You see, so I think the marketing bullshit from a lot of lodges out there and safari operators out there does mix it up. But, and that's where people get this skewed idea of what it costs to come on a proper safari.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's the big problem.
Man. Yeah.
If you're paying for something like this, what is the price on this thing? Price, oh God, 9,966 Rand. So that's like...
Sorry, 9,966.
So that's like $800, right? If you buy this, if you go on the safari, you are not allowed to complain about space on the vehicle. You are not allowed to complain about being in a minibus. You are not allowed to complain about anything because you are buying that.
And you didn't do your homework.
Is that so? Now let's go back to your Shenzhela, which was 1.5.
Yeah.
$800 versus double the price. There is more value in your product because of what you get versus something like this.
For sure. Yeah.
And that, I mean, I'm not sure what else to. I mean. It is what it is. You get what
and
you
again,
pay for.
There can be people that are going to debate about this because not everyone wants what we offer and what we provide our guests with.
We're not for everybody.
No.
I think we are, but we're not. but it is, like you said.
Yeah, people have different reasons for going on safari. And Dustin, you said you've been photographing for the last couple of years. And yeah, in order to get to that next level, you have to take that step. Mm. And... when I started my photography years back, I thought it was just going to be that one camera, one lens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it gets out, it gets expensive.
It does. It does. I'm just quickly going to go and look through here because I thought Shazmin asked you another. Just on saying Shazmin, I'm chatting to her about a private guided trip as well. My first thing is always, what is your budget? How long do you want to go for?
Yeah.
And people think when they give us a budget, it's a goal. It's not a target. Mm. If you say to me, I have $20,000 per person, I know where we can look for accommodation.
Yeah.
I'm not going to take you to the Kruger on a 3-star lodge and we're staying at other places. Whereas if you say saving is only 5, we work within those constraints. It just speeds the process up.
Exactly.
I almost thought there was... Where was this? I think there was another one for you. Someone sent it through earlier today. I think it's lost. I can't remember who it was. Someone asked for this podcast... Okay, so budget to safari side. Dustin, get hold of Michael. Book a safari. You won't be sorry.
Yeah, man. I look forward to meeting you.
Done.
Great.
You know what, Dustin? If you do book, we'll throw in rentals for free. How's that?
Done. Amazing.
So, someone asked, I can't remember. I'm just looking. I've got to find it. How do you think your photography's changed since joining Wild Eye? Whoever asked that, sorry, I can't find your message.
To me?
To you.
Okay, to me.
From the last year.
No, I think it's definitely stepped up.
Why?
Look, obviously getting out into the field on a more regular basis, even though I was in the field every day of my life while I was guiding, does play a bit of a role. But also I think the main thing is, and I cover a bit of this in one of my seminar presentations, is spending time with like-minded people.
Yeah.
Using their ideas and their creativity to your advantage as well.
Yeah.
Either by feeling inspired by it, learning from their mistakes, or trying to better what they have currently in your own work.
Sure.
And obviously, it's going to take years, and it's going to take time, and it's going to take a long time to get to that next level. But in this last year, if I had to go look back at stuff I was taking at Sabi when I was still guiding,
it's sometimes cringeworthy, eh?
Yeah, it's shocking.
Like, holy shit! We should actually do a day where you post all that old stuff.
I've got blogs with my old stuff. Lose followers. So boom, whoever asked this, go look at some of my stuff from years ago to now. I'm trying to find
who it was, but that was the question. How's your photography changed?
No, it's a very, very good question. It's a great question.
Yeah.
But it's also not, if you don't have that drive to better yourself, you know, it'll never improve.
Yeah.
People ask me, and in honesty, when I look at my own work, I don't know if this is a good or bad thing, but I think it's crap.
I think we all do. I'm yet to meet a photographer who you say, listen, what do you think of your own photography? And someone's going to say, you know what? I'm fucking awesome. My stuff is the shit. I rock. I'm amazing. I've yet to meet a photographer like that.
Yeah.
Every single one of us.
I thought there was just something wrong with me.
No. Every single one of you listening, send me a message and tell me you agree with me, because I know this is fact.
Yeah.
Every one of us thinks, oh, I'm not good enough. I don't know if my stuff is good enough. Every one of us. It's a fact. You guys listening, you know you agree with me.
Yeah. So I don't think my work is awesome. I think it's pretty average.
Yeah, some pretty decent shots.
Yeah, there's some decent stuff, but it's not, to me, not the best. And I look at my portfolio of my best images and I don't say, holy shit, that image is world class. I just don't. Strange. But if I had to compare the top 10 images now with being here for a year and before I started with Wild Eye, holy shit, there's a big difference.
I think twofold.
But not only photographically, though. Post-processing as well.
No, of course.
Because but you know what? A lot of people think it's just, if you're a good photographer, you can have amazing images. But you can take fairly decent images.
Mm-hmm.
But if you understand the software and how to work Lightroom or Photoshop or whatever it is, that's golden.
Yeah, it is what it is.
It is, for sure. That'll take you definitely to the next level. So spending more time on Lightroom, whereas I didn't do this much at Sabi because of such that busy schedule.
Sure. You had to do like other stuff for them.
Right? Exactly. Maintenance work, walking, all that kind of stuff. So
walking's cool, maintenance not. I think the cool thing as well, and a lot of young guides and people who listen to this, I know you guys listen to this from the industry. The reason why I think working in the industry like we do makes us better photographers and better Lightroomers, is that a word? Is because when you work with people, when you have to stand up and teach and lecture and educate and inspire, you have to think two or three steps in advance. You have to know, if someone asks me why should I do this, you should already be at the next step thinking, oh, okay, what could they ask? So you always have to be that step ahead.
For sure.
I think there's value there.
I know, definitely. You always have to be on your toes. And I think you touched a good topic there, because not only do you have to think ahead, but I mean, you get questions thrown at you left, right, and center.
Oh, yeah.
You've
got to jump from aperture to Lightroom to motion blur in a matter of 2 minutes.
It's insane.
So you have to know your shit.
And I think, I just want to quickly, I can't remember the exact wording. I just want to go into...
What are you Googling there?
No, it's an image in one of my presentations for seminar that I want to quickly... So I don't have the images anymore, but they're on... Here it is. Okay, so when it comes to learning, this is a slide I have in a presentation, which is, we learn 10% of what we read, 20% of what we hear, 30% of what we see, 50% of what we see and hear, 70% of what we discuss, 80% of what we experience, and 95% of what we teach others.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
You know, and that's when exactly I saw it and read this, it really hit me.
Mm.
And being with Wilder for a year, teaching our guests, because when I was guiding, I wasn't really focusing on bettering the guests' photography because that wasn't my job.
Sure.
At Sabi Sabi, your job is guiding.
Yeah, show them an elephant and tell them how old it is.
Yeah, a beautiful all-round safari experience.
Sure.
And right now, our primary goal is getting their photography from level A to level B, you know, climbing the rank. And when I read this, it's proper. So not only spending time with like-minded people, if you do spend time with like-minded people, you're going to want to learn from each other. So if you can teach your friend or your family member who's joining you on photo walks in the park, whatever it may be, teaching each other of new things that you've either read or learned or practiced it's just going to stick so much better.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, that's vital. Eh?
I think the frustration factor a lot of people feel with their photography and in life in general, this goes from fitness to business, whatever. People think of frustration as a negative emotion. I don't. I think frustration, if you spin it correctly, maybe I'm just eternal optimist, but frustration, if you spin it correctly with I wish I was better or it's not getting better, is you know there is something better that you know you can get to.
Driving you.
You just don't want to get there. You want to get there too soon.
Exactly.
People want to not put in the hard work, so I think that's a pretty good thing.
Yeah, for sure. If you don't have that mindset or that if you see negative as negative and not as drive.
Yeah,
I see it more as a drive behind me and something gets you down. I mean, yeah, it sucks. Something's not working out the way you want it to, but just push harder to get there next.
That's life, eh?
Yeah.
One more question for you from me before we wrap this up.
Here's
what has been the most difficult thing in this last year, joining Wild Eye? Apart from us seeing you in Safari for like a month at a time.
Yeah, that's pretty horrible. I don't know, to be honest. I've never really thought of that. There's been a few ups and a few downs. But that, like you said, is life. You'll always have things you're not too happy about, and you'll always have things that really make you happy. But we're not a big team, but I think getting into, I can't call it a personal space, but if I can call it a respective space amongst our team members.
Because we're a very quiet, shy, reserved bunch of people in the office. Right?
Yeah, all sit behind our computer.
Between myself, Marlon, and Jono, it's a quiet, reserved bunch.
I think just getting into that comfort zone, respectful zone, in a way kind of proving myself.
I think that's a good thing though.
Yeah, for sure. And after this year and comments I've received from the team as far as I feel good about it. I've got to the next level up, which is good. But yeah, I think that's going to be a continual stress and worry.
Tell me about it.
Is because now you get to the next level, but now you don't want to just hover there. You want to get to the next one. Which is tough. And it's just... and reach-wise, I think, so that, and then just kind of engagement. If I look at my social platforms, really grown well.
You went over 10K on Instagram now, eh?
Yeah.
Can you remember what you were when you started here?
Dude, when I left Sabi, I was on 700. That was September.
10,000 in a year, eh? Yeah, you see.
And that's just, continuous posting stories, engagement.
And that's speaking, or what Marlon and I spoke about in yesterday's podcast.
Exactly. I mean, it's a consistency thing.
Yeah.
And I heard, I was sitting here when Marlon and yourself were speaking, is that Marlon and you, we'd all want to rather see two decent images, like Keaton, for example.
Yeah.
He doesn't post every day.
Yeah.
But he spends time working on his images, making sure they're looking top class and then getting them out there.
So these are decent. He's not posting any crap.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's not a continuous cycle of hogwash images. There's good images coming out from his site, which is value in its own sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if you do have the content, what's it?
Yeah, we're talking about you, John.
Yeah, so that's what I'm
talking about. Great images, value, it's amazing. John, everybody.
If you have the amount of content to post great images three or four times a day, so may it be, go for it. And we just privileged getting out there, getting more and more images every day.
Yeah. I was asking, based on what you said, I asked Marlon this yesterday as well, is if you had to post three times a day, every day, how long would you be able to keep going before you lose content? And you don't have any, and you can't post crap.
Does it have to be new images every single day?
Okay. So once you've used an image, it disappears. How long would you be able to keep going for?
Yeah, for quite a while.
Yeah.
Or maybe just over.
Yeah.
If you had to use...
You're looking at about 1,000 images.
Yeah.
I think it's possible.
Oh, 1,000, for sure. If you have to go look at that, for sure.
Oh, you see. Plus, and I think most people don't have that.
Yeah, so, and that's the thing.
It's a lucky thing.
So, that's been a challenge to me, is because I didn't want to build my social in terms of just because I want to build it and have the numbers and have the likes, but I want the engagement. I want to take people on Safari. I want to change the way they see the world. I want to help get... the photography to the next level. And not only that, I want to share my knowledge and skills of the wildlife.
Do you know a guy called Seth Godin?
I do not.
Seth Godin, author, kind of marketing genius, if you will, worth a follow online. He wrote a couple of interesting little books, and he does very short podcasts. Not podcasts, blog posts.
Okay.
And he's about the whole tribe. So you have your tribe, which is your followers and your kind of But the tribe is the people who really honestly, truly believe in you.
Yeah.
So I would rather have a tribe of 10 people who are obsessively interested and curious as to what I'm doing,
mm-hmm.
than have a tribe of a million and they just half care.
Yeah. They're not, yeah, they're just there.
People need to understand.
They just hover. Yeah, for sure. And I look at the following I've gotten this last year, and it's probably 80% of them, they're there, but they're just there.
Yeah. You know, you always have it, so...
Yeah, and then you have that handful that already, they are there.
Yeah.
Like really in your face, which rather be in my face too much if you really care for what I can provide for you.
Absolutely.
Then be there and not say a word.
Love it.
No.
So, speaking of, where can people find you online? Instagram, we said michael.labsha, hey?
Correct.
What other platforms?
Facebook, Michael Labsha Photography, and Snapchat is Michael Labsha. I think if you put Michael up, it'll come up.
Yeah, it picks it up.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
Cool.
And your email address. Dustin's got your email address. If someone wants to get hold of you.
Dustin's got it. So it's michael@wild-i, so E-Y-E, .co.za. And that's my email address. Yeah, please feel free to get in touch.
Fantastic. All right. Cool. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, G. I appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, man. We'll do another one after when we see each other again in like 2 months' time.
Yeah, brilliant. I look forward to it.
Absolutely. Guys, thank you for always. Try for always. See, I'm tired of talking. I'll try that again. Backing it up a touch. Okay, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Always appreciate your time. Great having you on board. If you have any questions for Michael or myself, get in touch. You've got his email address. Mine is Jerry, G-E-R-R-Y, at WildEye, wild with a hyphen E-Y-E dot co.za. Or you can just hit us up on the WildEye website. WildEye, that's wild with a hyphen E-Y-E.com. And you can get a hold of us there.
Cool.
Thanks so much for listening. I will chat to you guys in the next episode. My name is Jerry.
My name is Mike.
We'll see you guys in the next episode. Have a good one.
Cheers. Bye.